gamers, welcome to the inaugural episode of the 5 More Minutes Gaming Podcast, where we will cover all aspects of gaming and gaming culture. I am your host, Boomer, joined with me, my close friend and confidant, Chris, and in today's episode, we are going to be opening up to open world games. Well, Chris, going into open world games, we just came off of the high of finishing Elden Ring, completing that. Both you and I were able to 100% that. What a great experience that was. Before we jump into how great of a game that was, Chris, what was your first open world game?
My first open world game that I really remember playing, I think is going to be Elder Scrolls Daggerfall, which is way, way back in time. And I didn't play much of it, honestly, because I think I was really too young to appreciate the game. I got lost really quickly while I was playing it. And I think that kind of burnt me out on the genre up until I played the latest Zelda game, Breath of the Wild.
Question I had for you was, so Daggerfall came out in 1996, right? And then 30 years later, you pick up Breath of the Wild as your next open world game. There wasn't anything in between that you remember?
Not any that I would really... Now that I'm bringing it back, I guess I played Infamous a lot, which was an open world game that I often forget about for some reason. I beat the game. It was a lot of fun to play. In Infamous, you are like the victim of some kind of weird freak accident that gives you lightning powers. And you can use those lightning powers to go all over the world, all over the city anyway. You take power lines and you can zip down and you blast people. And it was a lot of fun. And for some reason, every time I think about open world games, I just ignore that one for whatever reason. But it was a lot of fun in there.
Was it not memorable? Was the story not memorable? Was the side quests not memorable?
The side quests weren't really rememberable. The main story was somewhat compelling, because you're just some guy who gets lightning powers all of a sudden, and you can kind of go between good and evil based on how you do the side quests. But I don't remember really how the story ended at all. So I'm not sure if that's just my bad memory or just the story didn't grip me that much.
And then would you ever consider any of the Souls series and open world games? Because I know that we've played a lot of those. We put a lot of hour into FromSoft games.
Yeah, I don't really consider those to be open world. And it's kind of hard to pinpoint why. I think maybe the maps are somewhat small to begin with. You approach them in a linear manner, at least in the first couple of Souls games. Like you kind of go through the first little area, you unlock a bunch of shortcuts, you go to the next area, and you keep doing that. And you can take some different paths here and there. It's all pretty seamless, which is akin to open world games. And there's side quests and a main story, so it would seem like it has all the main components you'd need. But I don't really think of those games when I think of open world. I don't know if you have a different opinion about that.
That's a great opinion, because I do think they are very open, because I feel one of the things about the open world is you can go do whatever you want, whenever you want, and you are allowed to do that pending some basic gated restrictions. You can get to a majority of the story in the first Dark Souls before you have to go complete other objectives.
Yeah, I don't remember the first Dark Souls too much, but it felt very linear to me. Maybe that's just how I approached the game. Like, I killed all the bosses in, I guess, the expected order. So that just might be my experience. I didn't try to circumvent him or anything.
You didn't try to shortcut, like, man, I really don't want to fight this guy today, so let's try to find some other ways.
No, he was in my way, so I fought him, you know? Even though he killed me a bunch, whichever one it was. I mean, they all killed me a bunch, but you just got to fight each one.
Well, would you say one of your crutches when going into open world games is that you would see an objective, and if you can't complete it, you're going to bash your head against the wall until you do complete it?
Generally, yes. I do have a frustration meter, right? After I get a certain point, I might do something else. Whether that's something else in the game or just start playing a different game altogether, that's who knows. In Dark Souls, I felt like there wasn't anything else I could do other than complete the objective that was in front of me, which is kind of why I don't feel it's an open world game.
But do you think there's anything other restrictive definitions for open world games?
Well, yeah, there's a few. Like with open world, to be an open world game, exploration has to be one of the key focus points, or key selling points, I might say. Dark Souls has some exploration, but not quite as much as I would probably expect. Like, you go around the edges and find some items here and there. And it's got side quests, too, which is another hallmark of open world games. And it definitely does have a story kind of connecting everything.
There is a story in there somewhere.
Yeah, the Dark Souls, it has an interesting way of telling a story, which is generally not telling it at all. You got to kind of, you find like a scrap of paper with a note written on it, and that's part of the story. It's the charm of the Dark Souls series, in my opinion.
which is a great part to articulate about the Dark Souls series and how it's a minimalist and deductive story that is not actually there in front of you. Whereas if you look on the flip side of intellectual properties in the open world genre, like Elder Scrolls, it's a lot more laid out. You have massive events going on that you're able to watch unfold, and you can see where the story is going and where they're taking it.
Right. There's a much more clearer story in the Elder Scrolls series. And all the, even the side quests and all that other story elements, they're much clearer and be like, hey, this is part of the story. This is part of the world, and gives you like a whole bunch of information about it. As opposed to Dark Souls and Elden Ring, where you just get scraps and rumors and whispers, and you got to kind of piece it together yourself.
So then in your opinion, is it necessarily a bad thing in such a huge game to be given guidance to go figure something out? Or do you prefer the FromSoft approach where they give you nothing and you have to either piece this together or die trying?
I like the FromSoft's idea, like on paper. When I was playing Elden Ring, I don't think I could have completed it without a guide on my other monitor telling me where I had to kind of look for stuff. If it was just me playing the game without like the internet at all, I probably wouldn't have gotten out of the first area, to be honest. Just because Elden Ring doesn't help you at all. It just kind of throws you off a cliff and tells you good luck. I kind of need a little more than that.
Yeah, so I think there's definitely a balance. And I feel that different game intellectual properties try to strike that balance. Some are a lot more guided. So looking at the Assassin's Creed game series, and then some are less guided or not even guided at all, looking at your FromSoft games. And then I feel like there's a nice little middle where Bethesda sits with their Fallout series and Skyrim. Recently, the Outer Worlds that we've been playing together, that one has a little more guidance than you get in an Elden Ring, but I still don't know what's going on yet.
Yeah, I like the Outer Worlds approach. It's got like your little quest log, and you can say, here, I want to do this quest now, and it'll kind of show you where you need to be for it. And you got to kind of puzzle it out yourself, and you got to talk to the characters. And the trick with Outer World, it looks like, from the very little I've played with it so far, is it's not so much about finding the characters you got to talk to. It's the moral dilemmas that they introduce. Because so far, I've been met with a number of moral dilemmas already in the game. And I imagine it's only going to get worse from there on out.
And so with all these different elements and all these different game intellectual properties that are sitting out there, to you, Chris, what is the open world game?
The open world game for me, when I think open world, I think Breath of the Wild. Every time, that's what I picture. Because I think they just did everything right. I mean, first of all, it's a Zelda game, which has a huge place in my heart. I think I've played most of the ones that have come out. And that's what drew me into this one. Like, it was Zelda, and the fact that it was open world, it had no bearing on it at all to me. But the part that makes it like the definitive open world game is, it's got kind of a vague story that holds everything together, but it's not so much in your face that you have to drop everything and do it, right? You have this whole world you can explore, and you're welcome to do it as long as you want. You can tackle the world any way you want. You can go to pretty much any area right away after you get done with the tutorial. You can spend your time doing side quests, doing puzzles, finding little Korok seeds the whole time. And when you're done with all that, you can go kill Ganon and save the world, and everybody's happy at the end. One of the things I really like about the Zelda open world is just, and it's kind of silly, but it's the ability to climb mountains. A lot of games use mountains and other things as your sort of natural barriers to force players into certain areas. But Zelda's like, yeah, here's a mountain. If you got enough stamina, you can climb it. Good luck. And I really like that.
You didn't feel like you were restricted in the boundary side, yeah. Right? So you see a big dip mountain in the distance in Elden Ring. You're like, I'm going to fall off that. I'm going to die.
Yeah, in Zelda, you see a big mountain in the distance. Like, you know what? I bet there's something cool at the top. You know where you want to go, and there's a mountain in the way. You're like, well, I could go around it, or I could just climb over the mountain. You know, and I usually climbed over the mountain, even though it probably took more in-game time. But it was more fun that way. But what about you, Boomer? What is your open world game when you think of the term?
So my definitive open world game would probably have to be Fallout 2 because of how much freedom it gave you. You came out of the vault, you do your tutorial, you come out of the vault, and it is go figure it out. There is a story. I feel it's set a lot more towards the Elden Ring side of storytelling than it did the Assassin's Creed side of storytelling. But to me, that was my definitive open world game. Then after that, I really got into GTA 2. Not 3, 2. This was a top-down version. That one was pretty unique in that you got to play gangster in a major city. And I love the exploring elements of that. You could go jump across rooftops. You could find a flamethrower, really create havoc in the city. Probably not get out of that situation alive, but the option was there for you to do it. So I really like the freedom that those two games gave me.
Yeah, both those series, Fallout and Grand Theft Auto, have really done a lot of work in defining the genre as it is today. You know, they've put in a lot of effort, they've done a lot of innovation, and they've come out with some great games that are awesome to play.
Yeah, definitely being able to keep pushing the envelope, right? I feel that where we're sitting at right now in 2022, the open world genre still has a lot of room to improve, right? So if you look at the latest entries from all of those series, from Fallout or even Elder Scrolls and even GTA, there are great games, but you can always look back and say, you know what? They could improve this. They could improve that. This could be a little bit better. So I feel like we haven't gotten to like the pinnacle absolute masterpiece where you can't go take the genre any further. So that is always exciting.
I hope we never get there. I hope there's always room for improvement, always new stuff to look forward to. I don't think gaming, since it's so much of an art form, I don't think we're ever going to see a point where a genre peaks, you know, and it's just all downhill from there. I don't think we're ever, I hope we never get to see that, you know?
And that's exciting, right? That is one of the best things. I think Pong has peaked, and that's probably the only game that has gotten to the best.
Yeah, it was the first, you know, you can't beat that, but since then, every game, I think, has done something to gaming as a whole to make it a little better. Or sometimes, you know, they do something bad and they make it so gamers as a whole don't do that anymore. But that's another story.
Right. And then, yeah, I definitely feel like there has to be an execution level, right? And then, and if you execute the open world so well, a lot of copies will start popping up. Take Breath of the Wild, for example. Some of them might be making a money grab and some of the copies might be riding the wave, but adding their own flair. Like Genshin Impact. And Genshin Impact can easily be defined as an anime Breath of the Wild.
Yeah, when I first started playing Genshin Impact, I was like, this is copy and paste Breath of the Wild. You can climb mountains, you just run around, pick up flowers to do stuff. Genshin Impact does do some interesting things with their game. It's a gacha game, though, so that kind of puts a damper on it for me personally. I am not a huge fan of loot boxes. But they basically took Breath of the Wild, made their own little mix up to it, which I think is fair too. I definitely don't mind copycat games as long as they try to make it their own in some way.
So you like the character switching capabilities?
I thought that was very interesting, yes. You know, you got your four characters in a party in Genshin Impact, and if you fight a fire monster but you're a water character, you know, you can, or whichever way, if you're fighting a monster that you're disadvantaged to, you can swap up your characters. Just instantly, like mid-attack, you swap characters, which I thought was pretty cool. I don't think I'd seen a game do that before.
So yeah, you can even have innovation with copycat games, which I appreciate. But if it's just a money grab, then it's usually pretty easy to see through those.
Yeah, and most of those games, luckily, they fall by the wayside pretty quick and are kind of forgotten about, I think. Speaking of value, though, how much value should you get from a game? Right? Like, what's your dollar-to-hour ratio?
My dollar to hour ratio.
So let's say you spend, I don't know, $60 on a game. Like, how much time should you spend in that game for it to be worth it to you?
Ooh, that is a great question. I don't ever put time and value. I've never done that before, is put my time and value and correlated those two together. If I buy a game for a price and every time I play that game, I'm enjoying it, I felt like I am happy with that decision. The only time I ever regret that is if I play a game and I'm like, man, this didn't feel like it should have been $60. I've never said if I play this game for 120 hours, I've gotten my money's worth out of it. To me, it's all, did I get the enjoyment I want out of it? Then I put the stamp of approval that yes, that was monetarily worth my value.
Okay. That makes sense.
What about you, Chris? Do you have a price point?
I do. It's a dollar an hour for me. It's a pretty hard point. If a game does not provide a dollar for hour entertainment, it was a bad purchase.
Oh, so if you bought a $70 game and you played it for 70 hours, that was a okay purchase.
Well, it's kind of like a binary thing. It was like either a good purchase or a bad purchase.
Okay.
So $70 game, 70 hours, perfect purchase. Some other things obviously go into that, whether how much of that 70 hours I really liked or not. But that's kind of like my baseline, I'd say.
So have you ever bought a game that you felt was definitely undervalued, that you were hyped about? Like you bought a game and its DLC totaling $100. You only played it for 90. Did you ever feel that that was a good investment?
Yeah, you know, if it's like that, I'd say it still can be a good investment. I mean, it's not a hard science, you know, I'm not over here with a notebook counting these things out, but the best undervalued game I've ever played is Vampire Survivors. You know, I bought that game for $3 and I've got almost 50 hours of playtime on it. So that one's easily in my top budget games.
Well, that's good because that's a small indie game. I definitely feel, though, for open world games, most of the people who are making open world games are going to be your bigger studios, because it takes so much to make an open world game that you have to have so many artists, developers, testers, and then all of the hype to build up around it that I feel like only larger studios can do that. So all of the big open world games that people get excited about are going to have a higher price point to get into it.
Yeah, absolutely. So like games like Elden Ring, you know, it was a $60 game. I spent 140 hours on it. I loved it. But there's other open world games where I didn't spend that much time. And there were still good games. I still enjoyed playing it, but I wouldn't say they were worth the price point. Like if they were on sale, then definitely pick them up, but not for full price.
So with open world games in general being such a large monetary and time investment, how does one go about starting their adventure with open world games?
That's always a tricky question. I think watching YouTube videos about it, I think, is a great entry area into seeing if you will want to play this game. So watching a preview for it, obviously the previews are tailored to make you want to play the game. If that doesn't work, maybe watch a Twitch streamer or two and see if them playing through the game makes you want to play it as well. And I think those are kind of good ways to determine if it's worth spending your money on, at least.
That's a real good idea. I also like to always suggest to people when you're getting in, find a topic you like. If you like sci-fi, if you like space, if you like fantasy, there are great open world games in all of those different genres. But don't try to play a game that people say is good that you don't seem to be as interested in. Find a game that's reputable that is in the genre you are interested in.
Yeah, the base idea of the game should at least pull you in. And if it doesn't do that, then it's probably not worth your time, because open world games are big time investments.
Yeah, and especially a lot of the single player open world games. That's a good chance for you to check out, get away from people, places, things, and it can be a solo experience if you want it to be. And some of them have limited multiplayer, but for the most part, it's just you and the computer. So definitely a huge time sink for just you in that aspect.
Yeah, speaking of time sinks, one of the things about open world games that people quickly notice is they are a little buggy, mostly due to how big they are. Right, all that content, it's kind of hard to test it all, but how bug tolerant are you of these open world games, right? Like what point, bug would make you stop playing the game altogether?
That is a fun question. For all seriousness, bugs that make me stop playing is anything that stops my progress, right? Anything that I can't do that will stop my progress. Like if it deletes save files, if anything gets corrupted, If I lose a lot of progress with those bugs, I will stop that game. Maybe come back if somebody has specifically said in a patch note that they've addressed that issue. That is number one to stop my track. If it stops my progress, I'm done. I do like strange, weird bugs, and I have a sick enjoyment of experiencing them. Skyrim had a pretty infamous one that I was able to walk down the field and have a mammoth fall from the sky and land on me and kill me. And that was great. And I kept trying to recreate that as many times as possible because I got a pretty big kick out of it.
Yeah, I love weird physics bugs. Breath of the Wild, I'm not sure if they're bugs or intended or whatever, but you can do a lot of weird stuff with some of the physics in Breath of the Wild. And I love watching speedrunners abuse those, because I would never have thought to do some of these things, like the way they can stasis a tree, hit it a bunch of times, and fly across the map and stuff like that. But I don't really...
Those are great.
Yeah. While they're considered bugs, they're not game-breaking for me. I'm with you on your opinion, though. If I have to repeat progress because of a bug, I'm probably not going to do that and just uninstall the game. Right? If I'm on a quest and the quest object drops to the world and I can't get it again, I'm just done. I'm done.
Yeah, or if you get to like a dialogue thing and the dialogue freezes, you have to go back and complete the mission from the last checkpoint. Yeah, that's the quickest way for me to give up on that game.
Yeah, luckily I can't think of any game recently that's had issues like that I've played. Most of the games, while they've had their share of bugs, to be sure, most of them haven't been game-breaking for me in that way.
I can think of the most recent open-worldish game that was the when Dark Souls, the original one, was ported over to Steam and taken off the games for Windows Live service. There was a ton of difficulties in being able to connect in multiplayer. So never gave up on the game, but definitely gave up on the multiplayer until they released the Prepare to Die edition, which removed all the games for Windows Live Architect in there and made it all individually owned by FromSoft that they use for the Steam servers.
Yeah, I remember playing that with you, and it was rough. You know, Elden Ring had its own network connectivity issues too, where maybe not with me and you, it was generally fine. But if I was playing with some random people on the internet, like half the time I'd get randomly disconnected. And that was frustrating enough to make me not really want to interact with the multiplayer aspect of it. Unless I was at a boss that I needed somebody to help me. Which was
right. Unless you got to the point where your progress was stopped.
Yeah.
And I can't do this alone.
Yeah. And so then you just suffer through it, but it was still kind of detracting. It took me out of the game every time that happened, right? I'm having fun, I'm killing this boss, and I see that network connectivity issue. I'm like, okay, I'm not in Elden Ring anymore. I'm just back at my computer playing a game.
Yeah, that is true. That is another one that could potentially remove me from wanting to play that game as a game-breaking bug, but it just depends on the severity it caused my progress.
Yeah, with Elden Ring, the multiplayer was pretty tangential, so it didn't affect it too much. But if it was a multiplayer focus game that happened a lot, then that would definitely affect my progress, I think. Well, we can talk about the most interesting side quests, because those are always fun.
I like that one.
What is your most interesting side quest that you've done in an open world game?
That was a terrible prompt. It needs to sound troll and not robotic.
I can make it sound more robotic if you want.
Oh, please don't.
All right. What was your most interesting open world side quest?
Okay, so one of my favorite ones was Skyrim. I don't even know if it was the side quest. I think it was, because it wasn't necessarily part of the main story. And that's the one where you got to go become a werewolf. That was a pretty fun, memorable event, because I thought it was pretty neat that you show up into the first major city and they're like, hey, come join this warrior's guild. Hey, by the way, we got kind of an issue we want you to look into after you earn enough trust with them. You go in and you're like, oh, crap, I just got turned into a werewolf. And then the interactions you could have with people once you got to that point was really cool, in that, like, if you were a werewolf, there was a lot of NPCs who would disdain you just for being a werewolf. You would have people that used to be companions that would attack you on sight. And then there's also other people that would accept you as a werewolf. That was my most interesting side quest in an open world game. Chris, what is yours?
Well, for me, Cyberpunk 2077 just had so many of them. It's hard to pick one. But the one I'm thinking about at the moment is you get run over by an AI-controlled taxi cab, which has gone rogue, and you have to help it bring back its rogue taxi cabs. You have to solve this AI crisis, which is just a hilarious prompt, because you're just walking through the parking garage trying to get to your car, and you just get run over. That's how the quest starts, and it just goes intense from there. And it has a lot of Easter eggs in it, like GLaDOS is one of the AI cars, and there's a couple other little Easter eggs in the rogue AI elements. But once you bring all the cars back, you got to make the decision of how you're going to deal with the rogue AI. Are you going to reboot them? Are you going to let them keep being a rogue AI? What are you going to do? And that kind of produced an interesting moral question for me. If I was actually this character in Cyberpunk, what would I do with this rogue AI? And which I always kind of think about that quest a little bit, which is makes it the most interesting one for me.
Let's talk about new and upcoming games.
So Starfield. Let's talk about Starfield.
Chris, Starfield is on the tip of everyone's tongue.
Everybody's talking about it.
Are you excited or hyped about it? Or are you worried about Starfield?
Oh, man. I think it's gotten some pretty negative publicity. Maybe not publicity, but I feel the reaction to it has been negative, kind of. Maybe a little memey. People have been calling it, you know, No Man's Skyrim or whatever. I feel the reaction has been that Starfield is just a copy and paste Skyrim in space. I think it's going to be more than that. So I'm medium hyped about it.
Do you mean like a guarded hype?
Yeah, I will probably buy it and play it. And I think it's going to be, at the bare minimum, a pretty good game. What I'm curious about is how well the story is going to hold up. Like, I think technically it's going to be a very solid game. It's going to be beautiful. It's probably going to be pretty fun to play, but how is the story going to engage me? Is it going to pull me in? Am I going to spend hundreds of hours in this game? That's kind of what I'm waiting to see.
Yeah, and then also, as you touched on previously, side quest, right? It's got to have good, solid side quest. I can see a lot of people's concern with it being a copy and paste. It does feel like it might be getting into the open world space RPG genre a little late, because you have Outer Worlds, you have No Man's Sky. They're already doing this. I'm very curious to see what Starfield's going to bring to the table in terms of the open world gameplay capabilities, or in the open world genre. Capabilities is a terrible word to use in that sentence.
Yeah, but I agree. The problem with space, especially space games, is space is huge, right? I think Starfield might suffer from having a lot of repetition in its side quests and its areas. The game is going to have thousands of planets, but I mean, how many of them are going to be interesting enough for me to care about them?
And you make a really great point with that. For example, in the Mass Effect series, starting with Mass Effect 1, there was a lot of planets you could go explore that were absolutely pointless to go to, but you had the freedom to do it, which was nice, but it was kind of daunting and you got lost. As the series continued, the side quests got better at focusing you to points that you would care about, and it didn't really matter that you couldn't go visit all 8 billion planets. You could go and develop the story and develop your characters, which I felt was a more important part for Mass Effect. So I'm very curious to see if Starfield takes that approach. But, you know, they're bragging about their procedural generation for the game itself. So interesting to see if with procedural generation, can you still have engaging side content?
Yeah, that is going to be, I think, Starfield's biggest challenge, right? People give the Skyrim games a lot of issues because they have bugs and whatever, and that's fair. But I think the biggest thing Starfield is going to have to overcome is, how do you make a huge universe filled with worlds interesting enough for me to go play through the story and not get bored?
Yeah, so again, like you said, I'm guarded. I want to be hyped for it, but I don't know if they'll be able to, A, bring their own uniqueness to it, B, keep it entertaining throughout the entire adventure. Because you can get lost. Not gonna lie, Elden Ring, amazing game, but even in that limited area, I was starting to get a little lost and overwhelmed towards the end, where it kind of felt grindy to get through it.
Yeah, but the contrast with Elden Ring here is each of those areas is incredibly unique, I felt. Like, I knew exactly where I was just been loading up. With Starfield, I mean, it's got however many planets they're bragging about. And, you know, how am I going to be able to tell I'm on planet XYZ or whatever? I don't know.
Or is this ZYX?
Yeah, am I going to care about this planet? Is it going to have one city on it with like 100 people? I don't know. Procedural generation, it works for games like No Man's Sky, where exploring is the point. But for a game that wants to tell a story, I'm apprehensive.
And that brings up a great point, Chris. So if you got lost, how do you handle getting lost in an open world game?
Usually if I get lost, that's a quick route to getting uninstalled for the most part. Like, if the game loses me, I have a hard time with it.
And let's define what is Chris's version of lost.
I mean, booting up the game and having no idea where to go next. Right? It doesn't mean I got myself stuck somewhere and I don't know how to get out. I can usually figure that part out. And I'm usually motivated enough to do that. Like, if I boot the game up and I load my character screen and I'm like, I'm in some place I don't quite know and I don't quite know where to go next, I don't have a big arrow in my face pointing me left or right, then I consider myself lost.
So then how much should open world games hold your hand?
It needs a quest log, right? At least a quest log that shows me kind of the direction to go. It needs to tell me you need to at least go to this town and talk to this person, or something like that. And Elden Ring, I think, suffered for not having that. I know that's kind of the point. It makes the game more challenging, maybe, but I pretty much had to have a second monitor to play Elden Ring. I had to have a tutorial for every single one of these quests I wanted to do, because I'd forget where this person was or who I had to talk to next, because there's no quest log. And you can beat the game without doing the side quest, which is nice. And I didn't feel lost completing the main story. That was pretty simple. But doing the side quest, I was lost a lot.
And I think that's a good point. Like, there's a lot of people who sit in their different camps who like to say that I think a game should hold my hand all the way through because I want this to be a storytelling experience. There's people who are like, I don't want the game to tell me anything at all. I want to try to figure this out on my own or use a second monitor to figure it out. And then there's the data points in between where people are like, you know what? I would like to have a backlog. You don't have to tell me, go here, kill this guy, but to say, hey, go complete a quest in this area to progress the story would be nice. So in case you do something like play the game for a while, turn it off, have a life for a few days, come back and go, where am I at again?
Yeah, because that's a serious problem with some of these games that don't have the quest log. I don't think games need to go like the World of Warcraft route where it tells you specifically where to go, specifically what to kill, and you can turn your brain off while you're doing the quest. I don't think it needs to go that far. But it needs to point me in the direction when I need it to. You know, it needs to put like a marker on my map that I need to go this direction at least. You know, highlight some stuff for me. Because I'm here to play a game, you know, I'm not here to remember all this junk.
But that's where you are at with where you want to experience the game. And I think that's a great thing. I think different games can tailor their target audience to how they want their players to play it.
Yeah, that's true. But speaking of games that don't really hold your hand, the Daggerfall remaster has been, I guess, kind of to a point where it's usable by most people now. And so that's a game that really, that you do have to keep a notebook if you want to keep track of what's going on.
So there is no hand holding, which is cool to see that the Elder Scrolls series was able to grow in the open world genre. Because Daggerfall, great game, but for the time, it was amazing. Now, definitely feels dated.
Yeah, looking back on those old games, especially now that a lot of them are getting remasters like this, you can really see how much gaming has improved over the years. Like the UI improvements, the usability improvements, like we're talking about quest logs here. Like back then, for games like Daggerfall and anything before that, you had to have a journal by your side to keep track of what you did and where you were going.
The instruction manual had like 40 pages in the back of just notebook paper for you to have a quest log. It would actually say quest log, you know, chapter 36 quest log, and you had to keep track of that for yourself.
Yeah, it was definitely a very different time. I do miss those elaborate manuals. Nowadays, you just get a digital download, and even if you buy it in a store, you get a basically empty box, which is, I don't know, kind of sad a little bit.
Yeah, it's not as fun as it used to be, especially when they had the different ways to verify you had properly bought the account, and you'd have to like follow instructions prompted on the game to look into your manual and like find the third word in the second paragraph on chapter 6 and write that in there. I always thought that was pretty fun.
Yeah, I like that. I had a Wing Commander game that made you do that all the time. Every time you booted up, you had to find some word on some page to prove you owned it.
So back to other games coming out. Super hyped, Capcom announced Dragon's Dogma 2. Dragon's Dogma came out 10 years ago, and it's still regarded as one of the better open world games to experience. It fits more in the Elden Ring camp of it doesn't really hold your hand and it throws you out there. It also has a very unique single player experience. It's a cult classic. It's got a great following and it's very entertaining and holds up well to this day.
Yeah, I just started playing it the other day and I was surprised at how well it held up. That was one of the games I kind of regretted I felt missing out on. And so now I'm excited to get to play it again to get hyped for the second game that was coming out. But yeah, it had introduced a couple neat mechanics, I felt. One of them was the ability to sort of grapple your enemies while you're fighting them. So if, like when you're fighting these giant monsters, you don't feel like you're just hacking their toenails off and killing them that way.
I felt that way. I always feel that way anytime I play a Dark Souls game, right? You got a 13-foot giant, and the only thing I'm doing is cutting out his ingrown toenails to kill him to death.
Yeah.
Climbing on a griffin, stabbing it in the side, definitely feels like I'm trying to do as much damage to that monster to take it down as possible. And I really like that about Dragon's Dogma. What's another cool aspect that you like about it so far?
I haven't gotten too much into it. I've only played maybe an hour and I got past the character creator. But the ability to add people from the internet to your party, I guess, was pretty clever. I'm not sure how well it's going to hold up since I don't have any friends playing the game at the moment.
Oh yes, the first boss for any open world role-playing game, the character creation screen.
Yeah, I always have a hard time with that one. I get some ugly characters when I make them.
I'm not beyond picking a default character, changing the color of the hair, putting an extra scar on them, and then sending them on their way.
Yeah, that's basically what I did with Dragon's Dogma. Because I'm getting tired of making ugly characters. The defaults are usually pretty well done.
And so, Chris, any other upcoming games that you're excited about?
So I'm really curious to see how Forspoken comes out. So it's a Square Enix title. A girl gets from New York is transported into some mysterious magical kingdom and has to, I don't even know what she has to do. She's got a little talking magic bracelet that tells her where to go and what to do. And that's all I really know about the game at the moment. And I think that's all I want to know. I know enough to know I want to play the game. And so I'm probably going to avoid any sort of spoilers or anything like that until the game comes out.
Do you know who made it, Chris?
The publisher is Square Enix, and it's Luminous Productions.
Yes, Luminous Productions made Final Fantasy 15, which the combat system there is really fluid and really fun. And I definitely see that Forspoken has taken a lot more liberties with the combat system that they pioneered in Final Fantasy 15, and they're moving it forward. And I'm excited to see how combat feels in that.
The Square games I've played have been on the Switch, and they've been fantastic. So I'm currently playing Triangle Strategy, which is another game they've published, and that game's just solid all the way down. So that's kind of what I'm hoping for Spoken. If there's microtransactions or anything, I'm gonna be a little apprehensive about that, but I'm also pretty good about not buying microtransactions, so we'll see.
Yeah, I hope you're right. I hope it is a solid game and it avoids the microtransactions.
Yeah, if I pay $60 for a game, I expect it to not have microtransactions.
Yeah, and especially for an open world game, I think it definitely takes away from the enjoyability of it, as if, oh, you can make a microtransaction and then blaze through the first third of the game, no problem, because you bought a weapon stronger than everyone else's. They feel it takes away the exploration, the challenge that the game designers can put into there. Definitely not looking forward to seeing that in any open world title.
Yeah, but from what I've seen, I don't expect that would be in there. I'd be really surprised if this had any sort of microtransactions associated with it.
Square Enix has surprised me before in the past, so guarded hype for me. The last thing I want to jump on is open world aspects coming into other genres. I know that we've been talking a lot about role-playing games, which are popular, but with the Forza Horizon series, you can take that into a racing aspect. The puzzle game genres do great with open world mechanics, going all the way back to Myst. The Witness from 2016, that was a great open world puzzle game where every puzzle you did got you further in the story, but you could go tackle whatever puzzle you wanted at whatever time.
Yeah, and that's a lot of the genres that I often don't think about, especially in terms of open world games. The racing one in particular, those seem like they'd be definitely a lot of fun.
It definitely lets you do different things. You can get into a 4x4 vehicle, or you can get into a really sporty car and drive as mad as you want. Even lately, Street Fighter VI just dropped with their preview, and they're bringing an open world aspect into the fighting genre. Their single player is going to be an open world, create a character, go explore fighting game.
Taking Street Fighter literally, you go and walk around streets fighting people. I like it.
Try to say that out loud. People think you're crazy, but I think what they've shown so far in the short clips that they have is very intriguing.
Yeah, I was actually pretty hyped about it when you showed it to me. Normally, I've been kind of apprehensive of the Street Fighter series, mostly because it's gone very competitive with the last couple releases, I felt. And I'm not good enough to compete with other players online. But an open world Street Fighter, where I can just walk around and street fight people, that sounds like a lot of fun to me.
I am a huge lover of fighting games, but the big thing is that kind of blows my mind that no one's really tried to tackle this to make it as an emergent story that I can remember.
I'm pretty excited for it as well. I haven't played Street Fighter since the second one, but I think this is going to get me back into the franchise, mostly because I can beat a CPU Street Fighter, and I can't beat players online. So this is kind of more up my aspect of gaming.
And I hope that that's what they can do with that, is slowly grow people to where they are fighting more and more difficult computers that are going to be akin to the people that they're going to fight online if they ever want to explore that. And then if they don't want to explore that, I want them to be able to have value of enjoying just the single player. If they bought it for the single player experience, they got a big single player experience. So I feel like this is a great way for them to provide value for people who want the single player experience outside of the traditional fighting opponents online. If you've made it this far, gamer, thank you for being our first loyal listener. To put a bow on it, we covered the open world genre and some interesting aspects of it. Please leave comments about what you did or didn't like and what content you want covered in the future. This has been a 5 More Minutes production.